Welcome to The Grand Conversation, the Machon Siach podcast. Machon Siach at SAR High School, honoring the memory of Belda Kaufman Lindenbaum Zichrona Livracha, is the research arm of SAR High School, where faculty bridge theory and practice on matters of Jewish education, curriculum, and culture. I'm your host, Shmuel Hain, Rosh Beit Midrash V'Torah Shebaal Peh at SAR High School. Our producer is Avi Bloom, and our engineer in the studio today is Greg Schmidt. This episode of the podcast is devoted to the subject of Sephardic students in our schools. On this podcast, we are thrilled to welcome Ms. Denise Samstein, Judaic Studies faculty and director of Sephardic engagement at SAR High School. This is a long overdue conversation, which we're having today on the heels of a very successful conference that Denise organized and convened recently at SAR High School. The conference brought together some 40 educators from throughout the tri-state area. The theme of the conference was Mimizrach Lema'arav, supporting Sephardic students in yeshiva day schools. Denise, welcome to the Grand Conversation.
Thank you so much. It's an honor to be here.
Okay, Denise, so let's talk first before we get to our school and before we get to this conference. Can you share with us a bit about your own upbringing and schooling? Do you recall moments when you first encountered or became aware of the differences between your own culture and maybe Ashkenazi culture? Share with us a little bit about that journey.
Yeah, definitely. Before I start with my journey, I just want to say, now at 31 years old, I feel like I really straddle both the Ashkenaz and Sephardic worlds very, very well. But I'm going to take you back to a time when I really knew nothing. So let's go back. I grew up in the Syrian community in Brooklyn, and I went to Magen David Elementary School, including actually ninth grade, and I switched to Flatbush High School in 10th grade. Until today, the joke in my family is Denise is a transfer student. You know, it was one of the most impactful decisions I made. And, you know, there were some Ashkenaz students at Flatbush, but I really didn't know a lot about their culture because I think being that the Sephardic culture was the dominant culture, they were trying to be like us. My good friend wanted to learn the Sephardic recipes and, you know, all of that. It wasn't until that I went to Israel for the year at Midrash at Lindenbaum that I was culture shocked. I remember these girls from different continents, somehow they had a connection to each other because of their Bnei Akiva camps, which, by the way, I had never even heard of. I never heard of Bnei Akiva. All of a sudden, like, I was learning Camp Stone, Camp Lavi, Moshava, Morasha, I don't even know, whatever, so many different camps. And I was just dumbfounded that these girls from all around the world somehow have a connection from camp, but I didn't even know my roommate who went to Frisch and Ramaz. And, like, I had nothing to do with those schools. I never had any interaction with them. And that was so incredible for me to, like, learn about different cultures. But I remember one story when I was on Ben Yehuda, like every good seminary girl, I saw one of my Ashkenaz friends from Flatbush High School, Eitan, and I said, it's so crazy. We're only 5 Syrian girls at Lindenbaum, and there's like 70 Ashkenaz girls, and it's the first time in my life I'm a minority. And he was like, well, Denise, welcome to my life, all of Flatbush High School. And I was like, whoa, like epiphany. And it was just like this earth-shattering moment for me. Like, wow, I did not know my Ashkenaz friends went through that. And so much so, actually. You know how at SAR Shabbatons, we used to have alumni come back on the Shabbaton? So in the Syrian community in Flatbush, I think they still do it. We would have alumni come back and they would be an advisor for like the freshmen. So I would come back on the Shabbatons also because a lot of people are local. Not as many people go away for college. It is changing now. So I went back on the Shabbaton. And after my year in Israel, I learned all these Karl Bach tunes. I even brought back Ashkenaz Eshet Chayil to my house. My very Sephardic dad, who's a Baal Korah. We now, till today, we do half Ashkenaz, half Sephardic Eshet Chayil in my house. But anyway, when I came back to the Flatbush Shabbaton, all of a sudden I see there's this little room off to the side where there's a Karl Bach Ashkenaz davening. And I went to it because I was coming off my year in Israel and I really loved all the Karl Bach tunes. And I said, I cannot believe I did not even know this room existed my whole like tenure at Flatbush.
That room had been there. You just didn't know
there.
It was
yeah.
there.
I didn't know that my Ashkenaz friends were going to their Ashkenaz tefillah and singing all these beautiful tunes that I had learned my year in Israel. It was there the whole time and I didn't even know about it.
And is part of that because you were particularly embedded in the community because of your family, your grandparents, all that? Do you think that your experience is reflective of most of the Syrian students at Yeshiva Flatbush?
I think that I am actually more, you know, open-minded, and I was always so interested, even in high school, about learning about different people. So I would say I was more open than the classic Flatbush student, and I still didn't know. So I think it's just reflective of, you know, they were the minority in the school, and Ashkenaz culture wasn't really talked about. I think now, actually, I mean, we can follow up with Flatbush, but I think now they're actually trying to do some recruiting in the opposite direction because they still want to be a school that has Sephardic and Ashkenaz students. So they probably benefit from like a director of Ashkenaz engagement, which is funny. But yeah, I think it just, you know, we just didn't talk about their culture so much. We learned Ashkenaz halacha in halacha class, but it was sort of like a throwaway line. But yeah, so, it was amazing to me.
Okay, so let's fast forward now past your year at Midrash at Lindenbaum, and then you went to Stern College.
Yeah.
And how did you end up becoming a part of the SAR community? And when you started at SAR, did you imagine that you'd be here for as long as you've been here and that you've taken on the role that you've taken on?
Yeah, so, well, you have some to do with that. But basically, I was finishing up my last year at Stern. And by the way, whenever I tell my students I went to Stern, they're like, oh, classic Jew going to Stern. But it's really not from the Syrian community. I had 188 students in my grade at Flatbush. And I think there were two girls of the girls that went to Stern and a few more boys that went to YU. So I did the Jewish education program at Stern. And I as I was graduating, I knew I was going to be doing my master's at Revel in Bible. And I wasn't ready to enter the classroom like full force yet. So I heard about this little thing called the Beit Midrash Fellowship. I mean, it's not such a little thing. And you are the director of that, of the Rosh Beit Midrash. And I heard about it from a graduate of Stern who was in the same Jewish education program, Rachel Margolin, shout out. And she came to speak to our group. And I was like, oh, that sounds like a great idea. And by the way, I had not known anything about SAR until my year in Israel. I thought Riverdale was like a TV show. I don't know. I didn't know really much about it. But I knew more after going to Israel and Stern. And I said, that sounds like a great thing to do for a year. So I did it for 1 year. Oh, well, actually, first I applied back in the day when we had the big Jewish jobs fair at YU. Do they still do that?
Not
I don't
anymore.
Think they do.
No.
It was so much fun. I loved going to that. I remember meeting you and Rabbi Nitschloff there and talking about coming to SAR. And then I came in for an interview and I'm like, okay, I think I'm really going to do this. And by the way, at the time, I had not dormed at Stern because, first of all, like I grew up like Brooklyn to Manhattan, 45 minutes on the train, no big deal.
For the entire time at
okay.
Stern, you lived
there
at
was
home.
There was one semester I dormed. I think it was my second semester there, and I barely spent any time there. I think I slept there Monday through Wednesday, came home every Shabbat. My dad was like, yo, what's up with this? Like, I'm not going to pay for this. and you know what? And it was fine. I didn't mind commuting. I actually love the subway, story for another time. So I did not dorm there. But now that I was going to be working at SAR, and also I was in Revel, and this is before COVID, so we weren't doing online classes or anything like that. I said I knew I was going to have to move out of the house, and I moved to Washington Heights, and I loved it. It was such a fun experience for me. And I worked, that first year at SAR, I was enamored. I had like stars in my eyes. I know you always make fun of me from that session when I cried after Rabbi Harkstark.
I think it was every session.
No, it wasn't every session. There was one particular one where I was very moved by what Rabbi Harkstark said about his vision about the school until today. You know, you don't let me live it down, but it's good. No, it's good. I talk to my students about it and they love it. So 1 year turned into two. I was still finishing up my master's.
Well, I remember before that first year, you were like, okay, let me go to SAR for a year, and then I'll be able to go back and teach at Yeshiva Flatbush, and I'll be able to make the impact there.
Exactly.
That was the original plan.
That was the plan. I was always going to go back, give back to my community. And listen, there's still times where I feel a tinge of guilt, but I have to say, we'll get into this later, but now that I have this new role of director of Sephardic Life, I kind of feel like this is my calling. But back then, I was thinking I was going to go back. That was my plan, to give back to the community. I had a job interview at Flatbush. Rabbi Harari Alev HaShalom called me personally a few times, an amazing, inspiring educator, to come work at the school. And I was really torn. And I had spoken to a few of my mentors and teachers who even were in the community. And they said, even if you're going to go back, it's good to get experience first elsewhere. I don't know. And then I started dating my husband again at the time, and he also encouraged me to think more about SAR. And one thing led to another, and I stayed. And now it's been 10 years since then. So I'm very happy with my decision. But I think I fell in love with the school. I really did. And now I actually have kids in the school, and it's such a special thing for me.
Great. So starting 2 years ago, you became the director of student life.
Yeah.
So what are some of the things?
The Sephardic, yeah.
Sephardic engagement. What are some of the things that you thought you were going to be bringing to this role, and how has it unfolded?
Yeah.
What are some of the challenges that our Sephardic students face that you're trying to help them navigate and help the school navigate?
Yeah. So, this has been a very special role. I kind of wrote the job description for it, and it keeps changing, honestly, as I'm learning and networking and researching and talking with students. It's just like an ongoing, evolving, never ending. I have so many ideas. But from the beginning, my goals were always twofold, both inward and outward facing. So I wanted there to be a space for the students to bond with each other, students of similar heritage, to talk about their shared culture, their language. And we have a Sephardic Culture Club. I'll talk more about that. Have the Minyan be a very special place, right? I wanted a place for a hub for the Sephardic students to feel at home. But then it was also outward facing in the sense that, you know, the rest of the school should know more about Sephardic culture and thinkers and hashkafa and, even incorporated in student programming, curricular ideas, right? So those were my goals always from the beginning. And I'll say, even like with the Minyan, 2 years ago, we had 30 students in the Minyan, and now we have 57 students in the Minyan. And I don't think that's because we got more Sephardic students in our school. I think because there's more of a buzz, like it's cool to be Sephardic. Maybe people didn't even know about the Sephardic Minyan before, and we really made it this mini community. Some things that we're doing. So the thing that I love and that's the most fun is the Sephardic Culture Club. The first year of the club, it was more like of cooking classes, which, don't get me wrong, I totally love. We made sambusek. Do you know what that is? It's like the dough stuffed with cheese. It's so amazing. I brought my nonna, my Egyptian grandma's recipe. We made ka'ak, and I've even brought in other Sephardic teachers in the school. Like Daniela Lehman came in, and she taught her grandma's ka'ak recipe. That's like a cookie with sesame seeds, whatever. Well, not exactly. You dip it in your coffee, whatever. It's like a cracker. Mm-hmm. And we infuse like the culture and the heritage in that too. Scarlett Soane, who's graduating now, she taught us about a Persian recipe, which, by the way, tangent, I know I go on a lot of tangents. Something very special for me is learning a lot about other Sephardic cultures. I'm of Syrian and Egyptian background, and there's some Lebanese in my community too, but I really don't know anything about Persian culture, Moroccan, and I'm learning so much. So that's been such a treat, and learning about their foods, and I'm incorporating them into my home too. So the first year was more like cooking classes, pizza hangouts, stuff like that. But this past year, we really had like a lot of scholars coming in, speaking about, we've had Coming to America stories of community members. We had Menashe Chaimov, who's the head of SAMI, which is Sephardic American Mizrahi Initiative on campus. It's like a Sephardic alternative to Hillel, which is super, super cool what he's doing. We had an Arabic calligrapher, Ruben Shimonov, come. So, and you know, there was actually a part of me that's like, oh, is this too like high level stuff? Like, do kids just want to have pizza and hang out? But Dr. Rani Perelis, who was actually the opening speaker at our conference the other day, said, no, Denise, keep it highbrow, because sometimes the Sephardic clubs end up just turning into Sephardi party, right? And that's good. And those food things, they are good. But we also want to, you know, want the students to be exposed to the intellectual, cultural, and the hashkafic influence that, you know, of the Sephardic community as well. So Sephardic Culture Club, super fun. Yeah.
So let me ask you a little bit about the outward facing piece, because I know I was part of a group of Judaic studies teachers that met with a number of our Sephardic students. And I think also in terms of the numbers, we have a lot of students who have one parent of Sephardi heritage.
Yeah.
And maybe that's more of those are coming out and
yes,
joining.
They are.
What are some of the challenges that those students had faced or are still facing in our school community, which is still, you know, 90% Ashkenazi and maybe is not as attuned to some of the Sephardic practices and culture?
Yeah. Listen, I think that we have the most incredible educators in our school. I think that a lot of people just don't have as much knowledge about Sephardic culture or history practices, right? Sometimes in our classrooms we'll make assumptions. Like one senior who's graduating now said that in class it was said, oh, everyone's going to have their own menorah to light. But in a lot of Sephardic families, there's only one menorah for the whole family, which I like because I'm scared of fire. But anyway, and, you know, I remember even being given, in my early years here, being given lesson plans about teaching the piyut of Netaneh Tokef, which is not something that Sephardic congregations say on Yom Kippur, and teaching about another lesson plan about teaching about Kohelet on Sukkot. We don't read Kohelet on Sukkot, right? I remember another student, Stephen, saying that when he came in for his one of his placement tests or something, it was on a part of the Sidur, of the prayer, and it wasn't a prayer that he was familiar with, right? So we have to make sure, like in our classrooms and in the curriculum, that we're really representing like a wide range of, you know, communal practices. So I think that that's hard for them. And also I've heard in Jewish identity classes when denominations is brought up, Sephardic is not, the idea of being Sephardic is not brought up as an alternative. Now it is more, but one student said that she was embarrassed to say she doesn't identify as Orthodox. She identifies as Sephardic, which historically speaking, their denominations didn't really affect the Sephardic community the way it did within the Ashkenaz community. So I think that those are some of the challenges that students are facing over here.
And what about when sometimes we think we're being inclusive or trying to highlight Sephardic culture and practice, but we perhaps make some innocent mistakes or there are unintended consequences
for the
programs we run.
For sure. By the way, I just want to say that we'll get more to the conference, but at the conference, we definitely ruffled some feathers. Like there were people who were offended on both sides. And I was talking about this with my husband, and it is okay to make mistakes. We have to give everybody a little bit of leeway, right? We can't just cancel people if they say the wrong thing. We're all learning, right? I wouldn't want someone to judge me from one mistake that I made. So that's just, I just want to preface that. And I know everybody is well-intentioned, you know, in our school. As Dr. Alana Rebecca Rand said in all of her interviews that she conducted with schools, because she wrote her dissertation on this topic, Sephardic inclusion in day schools, she said there were no bad actors, just people don't know as much, right? But anyway, okay, some of the mistakes that I think that it's hard, it's not, you have to know the student, but some students don't like it when the teacher's saying, oh, and what do you do in your house, Lily, right? They don't want that. They don't want to be singled out. The truth is sometimes I do that in my class, but I feel like I can because I'm Sephardic, but maybe not. Maybe I shouldn't. But I kind of create a bond with my Sephardic students. So some students don't like being singled out. Oh, what does your family do over there? Oh, how is it like in your house, right? Another thing that I think is not necessarily reflective of our school, but I hear it in a lot of schools, some people think that the best thing to do for Sephardic representation is like a Mizrahi day or a Mizrahi Heritage Month, right? Now listen, again, well-intentioned, but when you do a Mizrahi day or Mizrahi month, right, what you're doing is just exoticizing the Sephardic culture. We're saying, here's one day where we'll learn about the other, the different type of Jewish community, right? But that's not what we're doing here. We're not a DEI initiative. It's not, we shouldn't be checking off a box to appease some Sephardic parents, right? This is about real inclusion of the Jewish community, right? Sephardic history is Jewish history. Sephardic community has strengths. Ashkenaz community have their strengths. And when we come together, we're a stronger whole, right? So I think some of those things, and again, the Mizrahi Day, it's usually, you know, around food and cultural stuff, and the intellectual part is also missing. So I think that while those are well-intentioned, and I think that is where sometimes that might not actually be the best thing. And I've actually spoken to a bunch of parents here in our own school, because part of my job as director of Sephardic engagement is I meet with a lot of the Sephardic parents, and I've heard from them, and they've literally told me, I do not want Mizrahi Day. What we want is institutional change, which is incorporating into halakha classes. In history classes, when we're teaching about the Holocaust, teach about actually there were Sephardic Jews who were affected by the Holocaust, right? We had scholars in the school here. In every single room, we have a classical or a modern scholar. We had like no Sephardic scholars 3 years ago, except for like Maimonides, okay? Which is obviously, Rambam is amazing.
Meaning pictures of
scholars, yes, in the rooms. And a few years ago, we said there's no Sephardic scholars. So we printed so many different ones. Hacham Uziel, Hacham Avadah Yosef, Adina Bar Shalom, Flora Sassoon. And first of all, it caused people, A, to learn more about these figures. And I've actually heard from my own colleague saying, when she was in the room where the picture of Rav Gigi up on the wall, who she actually had her year in Israel, it made her more cognizant of her Sephardic students in the room. So even though that might seem like a superficial, cute thing, like, no, it actually, representation matters. The type of pictures you put up. Also, Sephardic rabbis look a little bit different sometimes than Ashkenaz rabbis, wearing their kaftan and traditional Sephardic garb, you know. So those are some of the things that I would suggest also incorporating. And that's an easy thing too, like, you know, the pictures or stuff like that.
In our family, my niece, who lives in Israel and has four Ashkenazi grandparents and total Ashkenazi going all the way back, married a young man named Sneer Haddad from the Tunisian community.
Wow, amazing.
And when we came together for the Shabbat Chatan, first of all, the Shabbat Chatan is after the wedding, not Sheva Brachot like we have in the Ashkenazi community. And just that Shabbat, I learned so much about particularly Tunisian culture.
Really cool.
And it was totally different than even things I had known that I know from exposure to Syrian Jews.
Yeah.
I want to talk about the conference for a few minutes and just hear, how did this conference come about? What were some of your goals in bringing together so many administrators and educators from other schools? And what did you learn? What were some of the takeaways from this pretty much day-long conference devoted to this topic?
Yeah. Thank you for asking. I'm still going through like the feedback from that conference, but I'll just tell you from the conversations I've had. First of all, I just need to give a lot of credit to Rabbi John Kroll, because it was his idea to begin with to even create this position. And I think it came because there was some pushback from Sephardic parents in our school who were saying, you know, you're not really representing the Sephardic community well. And you know what? SAR is the type of school that when they see that there is a need that needs to be fulfilled, they act on it right away. It's so true to our mission to have a Sephardic culture club and a director of Sephardic life. It's so SAR. And even now we were invited to be part of Machon Siach officially, and it just makes so much sense for it to live there. But anyway, so credit to Rabbi Kroll. And we do these like monthly check-ins where I update him on what's going on. We brainstorm. He's such an amazing thought partner, honestly. And I want to say that Rabbi Kroll actually taught at Flappish back in the day. He had my brother-in-law, Jason's older brother, back in the day. And I think that You don't have to like Sephardic culture just because you experienced it. You can still appreciate it even never having been in the community. But I think people who have had spent some time like in Flatbush or in the community, he really has this deep appreciation for the community and he gets it. So he is really the perfect person to like be helping me with this. So anyway, we were meeting and just brainstorming different ideas. And I think it was his idea, actually, to do the conference. And this was back in, like, December. And then ever since then, we've been working on it. Like, the ball was rolling since then. I've been reaching out and networking with different Sephardic professionals, organizations. Oh, another good thing, though, actually, that was a good connection for me. Earlier in the year, I was invited to the UJA's Sephardic and Mizrahi Symposium, which was incredible. UJA is amazing. They were also a great thought partner in this conference too, and I made so many great connections there. I spoke about what we were doing at SAR. It was such a hoot, honestly. And so a lot of those people helped me, were great thought partners.
Was it mostly from schools that are predominantly Ashkenazi? Was it a whole kind of range of schools?
So it was interesting because I was a little self-conscious about this, like, there were probably more Ashkenaz people in the room than Sephardic, but I think that was the point. Like, I wasn't really inviting schools like Bar Chai, where my sister teaches, or Flatbush to attend the conference because they don't really need a conference like this. Maybe they could use it for the opposite direction, you know. But so, we invited schools that were predominantly Ashkenaz, even, let's say, BPY, which is historically a Sephardic school, it is actually predominantly Ashkenaz. And Flatbush was there, but as a presenter on the principal's panel. So it was predominantly Ashkenaz schools that have a minority of Sephardic students. Some of them
right. And even Yeshiva Flatbush, unlike Magen David or Bar Chai, the history of Flatbush, they navigated a school that went from predominantly Ashkenaz to almost completely Syrian.
They did, yes. And it's not still complete. There still is a little bit of diversity, which is why I also loved it. So it was predominantly Ashkenaz schools. And even a lot of our presenters were Ashkenaz. And, you know, Dr. Alana Rebekran and Dr. Ronnie Perelis, they both said a disclaimer in the beginning, like, I am not Sephardic, you know. But Dr. Perelis' presentation was all about Sfarad for all. We should care about this regardless if we're Sephardic or not. And Dr. Alana Rebekran said, listen, I hope one day I could give this presentation without having to make a disclaimer that I am Ashkenaz. And she did all this research about Sephardic inclusion, right? So I think the point is, you know, we could learn from everyone. But so we had about like 17 schools, a few different organizations like JNTP, the Jewish New Teachers Project, which is awesome because I am actually a JNTP mentor, trained mentor, and they do a lot of PDs on, you know, inclusion and making sure you're representing all your students. So we had representatives from there. We had UJA, the Sephardic Brotherhood. I'm trying to think. Oh, Jora Arusi from Jewish Unity Through Diversity. So it was really an incredible day. We might have offended some people on both sides, but that's good because it means that conversation was started.
What are the sides when you say
okay,
both sides?
I meant both Ashkenaz and Sephardic people in the room. Not that they're on opposite sides, but, you know, whatever. They're coming with different perspectives.
And the Ashkenazi people would have been offended that they were being criticized for not being inclusive enough?
I really don't think that was the majority of the people. I think there were one or two comments that got a little spicy. But again, you know, that's good. As long as it wasn't coming out of my session, which I don't know. Maybe my session did cause controversy. I don't know. The goals were, A, to network with like-minded educators, right, who have a common goal of including more Sephardic representation in their schools. B, to learn in broad strokes about Sephardic history and culture. And C, to walk away with some practical takeaways of what they could actually do in their classroom. When I was reading the pre-conference survey that I had sent out, I asked, like, what do you hope to gain from this day? There were some people who literally wrote, knowing where to start. Like, they just don't know. And the director of Judaic Studies at Luria Academy of Brooklyn, she said, I'm here because I love my students, you know, and they want to make sure they're representing all of their students. So those were some of the goals of the day, for the conference.
So looking beyond the conference and maybe coming back to SAR High School and your role here, maybe we'll conclude like you did with the conference with some of the practical applications. What are some of your goals near term and longer term for the future of Sephardic life and Sephardic engagement here at SAR High School And what do you see maybe as a model for other school communities?
Yeah, definitely. So first of all, I think a lot of people were very daunted by this idea, but I was trying to communicate that you don't – yes, it's amazing to have a director of a Sephardic life, but I know not everybody could have that. And I think there are things you actually could do in your schools. Like think about on your Shabbatons, like instead of the extra tray of kugel, which I love, by the way, serve one tray of lahmacun, which we started to do at SAR, or a different Sephardic food, right? Have representation of the scholars in your school. A lot of schools have pictures of scholars up, right? When in the lunchroom, we just got Sephardic beer konim, right? We have Ashkenaz beer konim up in the lunchroom and Sephardic beer konim. All of these are very small, easy ways. When you're doing Shabbat Ruach or Slo Shira or a Tish, right? Make sure you have a Sephardic song there, right?
Sidurim, Slichot.
Silichot, that was an amazing way to start the year. And we created a Sephardic Silichot booklet this year that I shared with all the participants, right? And by the way, I created the Sephardic and Mizrahi cheat sheet for educators. It has incredible, incredible resources on it. Like that I just gathered them together, right, and create those organizations. But what was I going to say? I hope that, you know, at SAR, we've done a really good job. You know, when we have a panel, we make sure that there's equal men and women represented on the panel. I hope going forward, when we're having a open school panel, you know, for prospective students, that we make sure that there's a Sephardic student on the panel. Not because this is a DEI initiative.
Not to check a box.
Because this is actually reflective of our school community. There is a very vibrant Sephardic life here, right? I hope that will be. I hope when prospective students come to visit SAR, they'll be able to go see this, that are Sephardic, they'll be able to go see the Sephardic minyan and not be put in an Ashkenaz minyan. Until recently, actually, freshmen were not allowed to choose a different minyan to go to, but now Sephardic freshman students are allowed to go out of freshman minyan. I hope that, you know, when we're teaching about minhagim and customs or history, you know, what will include the Sephardic story as well. And also, I would love for, you know, Sephardic Culture Club to actually have a few more Ashkenaz students come to it too. And minyan, I invite anybody, if you ever want to bring your minyan, you know, to come for a day, especially during Silichot season. It's so beautiful. Come check it out. I find that my students here at SAR, depending on where they went to school, like my Caleb Eden, who went to MDS, he's very comfortable in both Sephardic and Ashkenaz spaces. And at BPY, the Chagi Hadar, the principal, was talking about this. They really do feel comfortable. They know on Ashkenaz day, they stand for Kaddish. On a Sephardic Tefillah Day, they sit for Kaddish. It's incredible. I'm not saying everyone's going to have that level of knowledge as BPY, but it shouldn't be this weird, exotic, weird tune. Like people should, the students should know a little bit more. So I invite everyone to come to learn, you know, and feel like they could actually feel comfortable in both spaces. So yeah, those are some of the things that I hope to accomplish going forward. And I, you know, this year we did an educators conference, and I'm hoping that next year, listen, we might have a part two. UJA actually wants to do a part two. You know, they were going to do a conference, but because we were doing it at SAR, they did not. So nice. They're going to hopefully do the part two in the fall. But next year I was talking with the students, we want to do a Sephardic Yeshiva League meetup with students from all different schools. But again, I don't think we just want Sephardic students. We should have Ashkenaz students there too, where we're learning about both of each other's cultures, right? So that we could become a stronger, greater, more inclusive Am Yisrael. I think that's the goal here.
Denise, thank you so much for everything you're doing at SAR High School and for taking a few minutes today to give us a window into the work you're doing with our Sephardic students. I know you also love teaching Tanakh
and all
the other stuff you do here, but we'll have you back another time to discuss that. We want to thank you again and thank all of you for listening to this episode of The Grand Conversation. Please be sure to visit our website, www.machonsiach.org, where you can subscribe to our podcast and find all of our work, papers, essays, podcasts, and a variety of subjects. Until next time, this has been The Grand Conversation, the Machon Siach Podcast.